This is the American Ag Network Week in Review for January 19th. I'm Sabrina Hill. In a bit, we recap my reports from the 2019 American Farm Bureau Federation Convention, which featured President Donald J. Trump at the closing general session. We start out today, though, with Rusty Halverson.
Rumors this week of large grain trades overseas being seen as an indicator of what kind of buying activity is being seen in the U.S. while the government was shut down and not reporting trade news. Reports that Chinese buyers have been buying corn from Ukraine seen as an indication that perhaps China could also be buying large batches of corn from U.S. sellers. Chinese stocks rose on Friday on signs of possible progress in negotiations over Beijing's tariff war with Washington. China announced its vice premier will go to Washington for talks January 30th and 31st, aimed at ending the tariff war. Business groups and economists were looking for U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer to take part in the talks. It was reported this past week that U.S. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin was willing to roll back U.S. tariff hikes on Chinese goods, although Lighthizer and other officials were not in favor of that idea. U.S. and Chinese trade officials are in talks to reopen China's market to U.S. chicken exports. The negotiations, part of efforts to resolve a ban that was implemented in 2015 in response to an outbreak of avian influenza in the U.S., top issues for U.S. poultry companies include China's import quotas and technical standards. China, for years, has been the biggest global market for chicken feet, which are called chicken paws in the U.S. meat industry, and phoenix claws among Chinese consumers. There's a looming problem of a shortage of domestic clean pork in high-demand areas in China. So says independent meat analyst Simon Quilty. That could result in rising pork prices and consumers switching away to other protein. He says when the blue ear disease hit the pig market 10 years ago in China, imported pork played a vital role in providing much-needed reserves for the government to manage prices. The EU says it wants to exclude agriculture from trade talks with the U.S. The EU Commission announced its proposals from the 28 member states and said that EU negotiations will be strictly focused on the removal of tariffs on industrial goods, excluding agricultural products. That's a non-starter for U.S. agricultural interests that want a fair playing field and more access to the market. USDA reopened about half of the country's Farm Service Agency offices this past week to help farmers with existing farm loans and provide tax documents. Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue announced Wednesday the offices would be open Thursday, Friday, and again on Tuesday, January 22nd. Offices will not be open on Monday, January 21st, because of the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. Ag bankers and state ag officials are urging Congress and the Trump administration to reopen the government. Farm Credit Council President Todd Van Hoos and Frontier Farm Credit CEO Mark Jensen.
We really need a permanent open FSA to help customers through this.
After 3 or 4 years of price level decline or commodity value decline, for some of our customers now, their options are starting to be exhausted. We anticipate that somewhere around 25-30% of our customers in the grain industry will show probably less than break-even by the time we get to April, May.
The CEOs of three farm credit banks and the Farm Credit Council made their case in a briefing with reporters on Wednesday. The president of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, New Mexico Secretary of Ag, Jeff Witt, says not only are farmers and ranchers unable to use a host of existing USDA programs that they depend on, but also they can't use programs from the recently enacted Farm Bill, including a new program crafted to help dairy farmers suffering from low prices. Though the EPA still is on track to complete an E15 rule in time for the start of the summer driving season, EPA Acting Administrator Andrew Wheeler said that could change if the partial government shutdown lingers. During Wheeler's confirmation hearing to be the permanent administrator before the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works this past week, he outlined for the committee what emergency functions the EPA was continuing under the shutdown. Work on the E15 rule is not among them.
Yes, we're still on schedule for that. It depends on, we're not able to work on it during the government shutdown. It's not a court ordered deadline for us, and it's not considered an emergency. At this point, we can only work on the court ordered deadlines, the emergencies, or the other, the constitutional authorities, such as assisting my preparation for the confirmation hearing.
Wheeler said the agency hopes to have three proposals released in February, including the E15 rule, a possible reset of the RFS, as well as a proposal to make alterations to the market for renewable identification numbers, or RINs. Brian Jennings with the American Coalition for Ethanol wasn't overly impressed with all of Wheeler's remarks.
But you look in his written testimony, you can't find the word ethanol. You can't find the word renewable fuel standard. You can't find anything on E15. And maybe the worst part of the hearing for me was that Wheeler faced several questions about undermining the RFS through these small refinery exemptions and how members of Congress intended for EPA to reallocate those gallons that were waived for certain refiners. And Mr. Wheeler skirted or ignored or defied any of those requests. And so we have a lot more work to do with him and EPA on the small refinery issue.
For the year-round use of E15, Jennings says the waiting game continues.
The president, 102 days ago, made the announcement in Council Bluffs, Iowa, that he was instructing EPA to move forward. That was early October. EPA could have issued a proposed rulemaking late October or November or December or January. They didn't. They said they had to wait until February. Now we have, of course, this government shutdown and the uncertainty about whether this RVP rule for E15 year-round can get done on time or not. And so I think we have to keep holding EPA's feet to the fire. Obviously, Andy Wheeler cannot reopen the government. That requires a cooperative deal between the president and Congress. But we can't let EPA off the hook on this.
Jeff Cooper with the Renewable Fuels Association.
We know how his predecessor handled these exemptions. It basically, any refinery that asked for one got one. But it's, you know, we have a new administrator in charge of the agency, and we're hoping that he's going to bring more constraint and judiciousness into his review of the exemption petitions that have been submitted. But you know, refiners are going to be getting ready to demonstrate compliance with the 2018 standards in February, and so we'll know whether they were granted an exemption or not really by the end of February, early March timeframe.
U.S. ethanol output rose last week for the first time since late November. That according to Wednesday's report by the Energy Information Administration. The 51,000 barrel increase was viewed as positive for corn futures. Some market analysts expect that average yearly prices for corn, wheat, and soybeans could all move higher in 2019, but the outlook hinges on the success of trade negotiations between the U.S. and China. Purdue University ag economist Chris Hurt.
If we don't get that deal with China, we're dealing with horrible, burdensome surpluses of soybeans, supplies that we have not seen in terms of inventories for 33 years. I was looking at that data recently. We go back a long ways to have a soybean stock-to-use ratio that's any higher than we have right now. So I think what this says is when you have highly uncertain time periods, doing some diversification in our pricing makes a lot of sense. I know a lot of producers put the beans in storage. They got the very substantial market facilitation payment, the trade aid payment, and now they're hoping to hit that trifecta of getting a big deal with China and getting maybe even stronger soybean prices. But I think we have to really be cautious, and so we've been advising doing at least some marketing when we get these rallies back up to near the highs that we've seen over the last 3 to 6 months.
U.S. agriculture groups are praising USDA's final bioengineering disclosure standard, arguing the rule strikes the right balance between consumer demand and the needs of farmers and the food industry. Chuck Connor with the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives.
This has been, you know, a three or almost four-year process of we started out trying to stop the state of Vermont from imposing requirements and regulations on GMO-produced corn and soybeans and sugar and a lot of other products that really would have dramatically altered the landscape out there in terms of how farm products are produced. We did that. This bill has now been fully implemented by USDA as a result of the new rule. We feel those rules are really sound rules. They preserve science as the basis by which we regulate products. But at the same time, too, it provides a lot of flexibility for food companies to meet the needs of, you know, of consumers as they see fit. And we know that consumers are, you know, a changing group out there, and we've got to adjust and amend the way we do things in order to meet consumer demand. And this bill gives the flexibility for both of those things, science and consumer interest. And we just feel like USDA got it right in this rule, and believe that's going to be a big accomplishment for agriculture going forward.
As we look ahead to the planting season, DTN senior meteorologist Bryce Anderson says the picture has definitely improved on the U.S. drought monitor maps for several areas.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. I mean, when you're talking about the crop areas, pretty much east of the Rockies, there's hardly any area that is dry. Now, there is a portion of, the northern third of the state of North Dakota where there is some longer-term drought in effect. Otherwise, it's hard to find anything. There's some local dryness in parts of Texas and a little bit in Oklahoma. Other than that, there's plenty of soil moisture to work with, and the dry areas have been pretty well focused west of the Rockies. Now, it's interesting, you know, you think about that, and last week, the Weather Prediction Center from NOAA, those folks are still working, put out a notice saying that the year 2018 was a very wet year for the continental U.S. I did a little bit of trading notes back and forth with them, and they clarified that by saying that it really did make a difference on where you were, because we had many areas of the north central and into the northeastern parts of the country where the precipitation amounts were a record by a long ways. I mean, by more than, you know, 10 inches above normal, you know, that type of thing. But from the Rockies west, it was very dry, and you had a lot of areas in the southwest and in parts of the interior northwest where the precipitation totals for the year were very close to a record minimum. So it was a real case of have and have not when you look at the year 2018, you know, as an entire calendar year for that precipitation. There were some, you know, just incredibly wet areas, but also some very, very dry locations.
In South America, the Buenos Aires Grain Exchange said this past week that Argentine farmers had finished planting 98.8% of the area forecast to be planted with soybeans, although heavy rains in some areas led the exchange to cut its estimate of planted area by about 494,000 acres. The exchange didn't rule out further cuts to its estimate of the planted area for soybeans. Corn planting advancing to around 89% finished, according to the exchange.
The American Farm Bureau Federation spent last week in New Orleans for its centennial celebration and annual convention. In the latter part of the week, voting members held their annual meetings to determine policy and get updates. Earlier in the week, I talked with Will Roger, the Director of Policy Communications for the American Farm Bureau Federation. He gives us a look at what the buzz was at the convention.
There's a lot of buzz about, you know, how are we going to get through, frankly, 2019? You know, it's been a tough year. It's been a tough 5 years for ag. So, you know, right now, if you walk around and ask people what they think, what's on their mind, I think markets are on their mind. I think the farm bill's on their mind, implementation. And I think, you know, basically mitigation payments are also kind of, you know, looming in the background.
Roger also has an update on a regulation that's a particular problem for farmers and ranchers.
Yeah, you know, we've been talking about the Waters of the United States rule for quite some time. We like to call it the Clean Water Rule now because we finally have one that we think is going to give us clean water and clean rules both. It's moving through the courts. We've got you know, a new rule that we expect to come out any day now as soon as this shutdown is over with. It'll be published in the National Register, and it'll be open for public comment. So, you know, we're feeling pretty good about that. We think we can get a rule in reasonable order and get a rule that the courts are going to support, because, you know, the courts have been stopping the previous rule, the 2015 rule, kind of left, right, and center. It's not blocked everywhere, but most of the country, it's not in effect. We want to make sure it stays that way.
The closing session of the American Farm Bureau Centennial Celebration and Annual Convention wrapped up with U.S. President Donald Trump speaking to the approximately 6,000 farmers and Farm Bureau members in attendance. Trump started his speech on the topic of trade.
We've had so many good weeks and good days, and it's only going to get better because we're doing trade deals that are going to get you so much business, you're not even going to believe it.
After paying recognition to some of the elected officials in the audience, the president went into what would be a reoccurring theme in his speech, the wall.
As you all know, there's currently a tremendous humanitarian and security crisis at our southern border. It's tremendous. It's been there for years. It's been there for decades.
And immigration.
The crisis of illegal immigration impacts all Americans, threatening public safety, overwhelming public resources.
He also touched on tax cuts, veterans programs. He talked about work visas for migrant workers.
A lot of people don't understand this. You need those. You need people to help you with the farms. And I'm not going to rule that out. I'm going to make that easier for them to come in and to work the farms. You've had some people for 20, 25 years. They're incredible. Then they go home and they can't get back in. That's not going to happen. But we're keeping the wrong ones out, okay? We don't want the wrong ones coming into our country.
He discussed the current government shutdown.
We are fighting very hard to defend our nation. And many people that aren't getting a payment, that aren't being paid, have let us know in the strongest of terms, a big amount. They said, sir, what you're doing is of paramount importance. Do the job right, and we are with you 100%. You'd be surprised at how many people have said that. And it's not easy for them, but it's a lot of people.
He talked about the Waters of the U.S. rule.
We're saving farmers and ranchers from one of the most ridiculous regulations ever imposed on anybody in our nation, the Waters of the United States rule.
Trump also mentioning ethanol.
We're ensuring that ethanol remains a vital part of America's energy future with E15, and we're making it available year-round, all 12 months. That was a big, big difference for the farmers.
To hear his full hour-long speech, head to our website, AmericanAgNetwork.com, for a link. That's the Week in Review for this week. We won't be around next weekend, but tune in again February 2nd. I'm Sabrina Hill. For Rusty Halverson and myself, thanks for listening.